You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, and we're in the middle of November, and that means finally it's time for the NCAA women's basketball season to start. And if it's time for the season to start, that means it's time for us to dust off the Dishin' and Swishin' roundtable and pull up some seats next to it and have some conversation. And I'm pleased to welcome some of our regulars that have been on in the past back to discuss the NCAA women's season. First, we've got from the AP, Doug Feinberg. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Dave. Great.
From Pac-12 Networks, Cindy Brunson. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
And from the Big Ten Network and all places, ESPN and everywhere else that you can look, LaChyna Robinson. Hi, LaChyna. How are you?
Yeah, you never know where I'll be working, right? I'm doing well, David. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure. So we kick off the season, and in many ways, we're where we ended the season in similar fashion. You've got UConn as a favorite, and Notre Dame is in everybody's list as one of the top three teams in the country. But we've got Dawn Staley in South Carolina crashing the party, possibly, and is ranked preseason ranked number two with a lot of talented players. So why don't we start at the top, and we might as well start with the Huskies. And, you know, Doug, you lose a player like Dolson in the post. You lose a guard like Hartley. You bring in a whole bunch of freshmen. Does UConn miss a beat, or are they just going to be looking just a little bit different?
Well, Dave, I think they miss a beat. Maybe not on the court per se right away, because obviously they bring in all these new All-Americans and McDonald's high school stars and such. But they're missing, I think, that they had off the court with Dolson and Hartley. I mean, the fact that Gino cried last year when the tournament was over and he knew it was the last time he was going to coach them in college, that says something. He's had a lot of great players, but these two were something special to him. And just Dolson sort of brought that X factor to them. I mean, she was a great passer on the post, from the high post. She was a great player. She could score. She could pass. She could play defense. She was awesome. But she was the glue for that team. And I think that's something that is not going to be replaced easily right away. Sure, they still have the best player in the country in Breanna Stewart. There's no question about that. Clayton Mosqueda Lewis looked very, very good so far. She's lost a little bit of weight, and she's supposedly in the best shape she's been in a while. She's healthy. So they have the talent on the court. It just may take a little while for them to get that chemistry that's also important in any sport back to where it was. So, yeah, they're definitely the team to beat this year. Will somebody beat them? We'll see. But fortunately for them, they're the opener, I think, out west against UC Davis, and they play Stanford a couple days later to give them an early test on a team that's maybe trying to find itself out there in Stanford. But the game I'm sure everyone has circled on the calendar is the South Carolina-UConn game in February, I believe it is, that will sort of give you a better idea of where those two teams are going into the stretch run into the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely, and we'll get to South Carolina in a few minutes. But, you know, LaChyna, Breanna Stewart is, you know, preemptive preseason player of the year. Everybody seems to pick her to be there. She said when she came here, she was 4 years, 4 championships. She's 2 for 2. You know, it's funny. I was trying to explain to people, you know, you watched Diana, you watched Maya, there was a smoothness there. You watch Breanna Stewart, and it's arms and legs and falling down, and and you look in there, she makes all of the big plays.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it's not pretty. At least it hasn't been, I would say, for most of her career up until this point. She just has physical dimensions that I don't think we've really seen before. When I make comparisons for Breanna Stewart, it's more like Dirk Nowitzki, Kevin Durant, you know, that level. Maybe, you know, you would think about a Candace Parker. But even then, just her length and her shot blocking ability, her outside shooting, you know, not big in terms of posting up, but she really is just a specimen, you know. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to watch. Her versatility. And you're right, it's kind of come together. I think I can remember her freshman year where it really didn't come together until I think the Big East tournament, really, when she started to shine and get comfortable. So we watched her grow and mature. But now I just see not only a totally different player but person. I mean, with the USA basketball experience, obviously, on the national team, how can you not have confidence playing with Diana Taurasi and so on? But also, just talking to Brianna and Doug, you may have picked up on this at Media Day. She just is confident. She's settled. She seems to just really be in a rhythm. And I'm impressed with her all the way around. I think she's hands down player of the year this season again.
Well, there's a couple of other potential top players on that team. Kalena Mosqueda-Lewis, Mariah Jefferson, and Kia Stokes at center is going to have a crucial role on that team this year, as is the freshman guard, Kia Nurse, who's stepping in and is going to get some big minutes. But, you know, Doug mentioned that they're starting the season out west. They start with UC Davis, and then they play Stanford. So I'm going to jump around a little bit, and I'm going to bring Cindy into the conversation now. And, Cindy, Stanford every year is always seemed to be there. You know, they always seem to be in the top 10. They're always at the top of the Pac-12. But I was fascinated that without an Ogwumike on the roster, Tara is shelving the triangle and is changing the entire way that her team runs an offense.
Yeah, she is shifting to a guard-oriented offense because she only has one returning Stanford player that averaged double figures last season, and that's Amber Orange. She's going to lean heavily on the sophomore guard, Lily Thompson, big time, and that's a very easy lean. Lily is special. But we're not going to see the triangle. And Tara misses the triangle so much, sometimes she just pokes her head into the men's practice just to reacquaint herself with it, because that's how ingrained it is in her bloodstream and DNA. And she totally changed it over this summer when she realized she didn't have the personnel to run it. She brought in Mike D'Antoni to teach her how to do a guard-oriented offense. And that's what Stanford is going to roll out. I'm very curious to see, with the expectations that that program has with its Hall of Fame coach and so many trips to the Final Four of late, how an offense change like this will impact them. If they start to run into trouble early with the normal expectations that this program carries, will there be a sense of panic? Will coaches want to change what they're going to do? Stanford is one of four teams in the top 25 preseason, 6 Stanford, 14 Cal, 21 Oregon State, 23 UCLA. Others receiving votes, Oregon, USC, ASU. Bottom line, from top to bottom, I contend that the Pac-12 is the strongest conference in women's college basketball in the Big Five.
Well, that's an interesting statement to make, and you know that gives us a good feedback leeway right into talking about a little bit about South Carolina and the SEC, because a lot of people will say that the SEC is the top conference in the country this year, but you're right about top to bottom. There are questions about the bottom of the SEC, but the top, you're looking at a conference that has 6 teams in the preseason ESPN top 25 poll. South Carolina is ranked number 2 preseason. Texas A&M, Tennessee, also very, very strong top 10 possibilities. You know, let's start with South Carolina and the fact, what people may not realize about this team, because Dawn Staley's team has sort of flown under the radar before last year, they have 3 of the top 25 players, according to ESPN, the same amount that UConn has. And Tiffany Mitchell is a blast to watch. Doug, I love watching her game. Talk for a second, if you could, about South Carolina and the development of this team and the growth that you've seen in the last couple of years.
Well, I think it starts up top, Dave, with Dawn. I mean, Dawn Staley was one of the best players in the history of women's basketball, and once she became a coach, she's really done a great job of building programs. I mean, she was fantastic at Temple, getting them to be one of the more elite mid-major programs that they have seen lately. And she's done a great job at South Carolina. She's building a culture there. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, they have a lot of talent. As you said, they have Tiffany Mitchell, who's one of the 5 best players in the country. They return their starting team from last year. They add the freshman of the year and Aja Wilson. I mean, that's a really good group. I think there was a little disappointment last year when they lost to North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. Everyone thought they were going to go further than that. But part of the building a culture is learning how to win big games. And I think that loss will help them sort of get and stay hungry and building for the future. And look, if they play UConn in the national championship game, which is obviously 6 or 7 months away, and a lot can happen between now and then, will they beat them because they haven't been there before? Who knows? But I think Dawn has done a great job of building a culture, not just with the players she's getting, but the school, which has really never been known as a women's basketball power, has sort of embraced the team, the Gamecocks, and sort of made them one of the top programs in South Carolina as far as support they get. And she's, as I said, Dawn has really done a great job, and I think they're going to win a lot of games this year. They won the SEC championship last year. They're going to build off that. And it is, as you said, and as Dawn told me, they think they are in the toughest conference in the country, top to bottom, which, again, I think it depends what your definition of toughest is, but they can make that claim. So could the Pac-12, probably so could the ACC from the top half of it. So I think really it's going to be one of those years where now that there's a pressure on them to see what they can do. Everyone knows South Carolina now. They have the highest ranking in the poll, I think, in 25 years or so, wherever it was. That let's see what they can do now. They're the hunted instead of the hunters. So we'll see if Dawn can keep that magic going and get them to stay as one of the elite teams in the country that has a chance to win it all.
You know, China, I'm going to throw it into the post here because, you know, you've got point guard Dawn Staley here, and all of a sudden you look at that roster and you got Alicia Welch and Elena Coates and Wilson. This team, she's loaded up on posts that can be dominant.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest transition from the previous year to last season was we watched this guard-dominated team that was undersized and just feisty for Dawn Staley in the early years at South Carolina transform into this beautifully balanced team that had inside out. I mean, I think Elena Coates, let's just be honest, was much better than we expected. And I've heard several people talk about Elam Ibiam as being a first-round draft pick, and that's a name you don't hear very, very often. So you have Welch, as you mentioned, who is undersized in the post, but you wouldn't know it, and you throw in Asia Wilson, that can do a little bit of everything. Well, you know that Dawn's going to have guards that are tough, that are quick, that are physical, but now they've got that inside-outside game. I mean, this roster is shaping up to look a lot like we're used to seeing a Connecticut roster in terms of the level of talent and the balance. You know, most teams have maybe a very good guard or a very good post, and one of each, if that's anything. But, I mean, Dawn's got the complete arsenal of wings, you know, guards, and posts as well. So I really don't see where she's missing anything in terms of talent, and as Doug mentioned, maybe it ends up being experience, just having to get to the Final Four and just be in that position. But I think Dawn's done an outstanding job, and keep in mind, most of these players are from South Carolina, where just, I would say, 5 to 10 years ago, we thought there were no high school players in South Carolina, and the question was, where is Dawn going to get these kids? And so, you know, kudos to her that she's recruited the state and done a very good job of keeping the talent there.
You know, I think that one of the things that you just brushed on, it's so important that it's, to me, maybe the most impressive thing that Dawn Staley has done there is she's changed the culture. I mean, this is a football school, and, you know, they've tried to have some success in basketball on the men's side and some in the women's side over the years. But, you know, she has managed to convert people into believing in women's basketball. And, you know, that is something that is so important to the growth of the game, period, is to get people to buy into the programs. And, you know, South Carolina's doing well in attendance, and they're not giving away tickets anymore like some of the schools are doing. And, you know, that's something that is key. But, you know, one of the teams the schools that we always talk about that's always in the list that's been a bit of a disappointment is Tennessee. It has underachieved in some people's eyes. Isabel Harrison is a great player, potential top draft pick. But it just seems that every time something happens to Tennessee, you know, Cindy, now we get into as the season starts, we get into this whole Lady Vols name elimination, except for the basketball team discussion that takes away from things. They suspend a couple of their starters for rules violations for the first few games. It just seems like Tennessee has a hard time getting things going and getting out of their own way.
Well, I like the fact that Coach Holly Warlick isn't messing around. If you break the team rule of not going to class, you're not going to play in a game. And you have to go and sit in the first three rows of the classroom, just like Pat Summitt dictated, and Holly is continuing that tradition. So these players are exiting themselves out of the equation. And Holly's going to work really hard to find the people that don't do that as she builds the program in her vision. And I think that's just going to take a little bit of time. The Pac-12 has seen a couple of its top scorers from a year ago no longer on rosters, that being Ariah Cook at USC and the big shocker, Cushe Roe at Oregon, who averaged 21.6 points per game as a freshman last year. She's not on the team. Kelly Graves got there, noticed some inconsistencies, and just last Friday dismissed her from the team. So if you can't follow the rules, if you can't live up to the term student athlete, you don't get to enjoy the privilege of playing Division I basketball. I'm very curious to see how it impacts the guard-rich Pac-12 with those two individuals in particular that I mentioned. But there are so many that can fill in and pick up the slack on those individual teams and throughout the conference respectively. I don't think it's going to diminish how many people from the Pac-12 get selected into the WNBA draft. In fact, I would argue Brittany Boyd and her teammate Rashonda Gray at Cal could be top five WNBA picks.
Very possible for both of them. And, you know, I do want to touch base on Cal. To go back to the, but I do want to finish with the SEC first. You know, Doug, Gary Blair always has A&M up at the top. I thought that they were a little bit overranked preseason this year with people putting them in the top five. You know, they're at four. Tennessee is at five in many of the polls. Are both of the – let's look – talk for a second about both teams. Do you think that either of those teams are really – deserve to be that ranked? Are they both Final Four candidates?
Well, Dave, I think part of it this year was that a lot of people weren't sure what to do after one and two, in the sense that UConn, everyone knew, was the best team returning, and then South Carolina was probably the second-best team returning. And then it's kind of name recognition helps. I mean, Notre Dame lost two really, really good players to graduation, yet they're ranked third because they have Jewel Lloyd, and Muffet's done a great job the last few years. So there's name recognition. I think if you threw names in a hat out of the top ten, you could sort of jumble them around after one and two, and there would be an argument where this team could be three, this team could be four, this team could be five. A&M and Tennessee obviously is a lot of top returning. The poll was done, I think, before some of the suspensions took place, so that could adjust itself later on. But A&M has its own suspension issue. Courtney Williams, as Deb Antonelli pointed out to me today, is suspended indefinitely by Gary Blair. She'll miss the game Friday, I think, against DePaul, which will be a good contest for women's basketball. So Blair's done a good job of sort of getting that program to be SEC ready. I mean, they won a national championship. They were in the Big 12. Now they're in a tougher conference, as we said, top to bottom probably, than the Big 12 was at that point. So Blair's sort of rebuilt around his team to be competitive, and I think it will be interesting. I mean, the SEC has not had a team make the Final Four since 2008 when Tennessee won its last title. Is that indicative of the SEC style of play? Isn't really working anymore in women's basketball? They haven't adjusted to it, or just talent's gone elsewhere? I mean, they had so many teams, Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, that were so successful in the 90s and early 2000s that now they don't have that anymore. Will South Carolina be the next sort of SEC power to make that run and get them back to that national semifinals? It will be interesting. I think Tennessee, if everyone does come back from suspensions and Harrison plays the way everyone thinks that she can and Tennessee plays well, they have a chance to make that run. But for now, it's early in the season. Maybe they're a little overranked. I'm not sure who I would put up there. If you said, who are the top five teams in the country right now after UConn and South Carolina, there's probably about six, seven, or eight teams that could sort of fit in that mold where you'd have pluses and minuses, and you could say, hey, they deserve to be here for these reasons, or you know what, they don't deserve to be there because they're missing these things. And that's the joy of preseason polls and preseason predictions is until they play a game, you're always correct.
You know,
I like that.
You know, it's very true. But one of the things that we talked, since we're talking about the equality in the conferences, top to bottom, and it was interesting to me when I was breaking things down for this. You know, when I looked at the top 25, the SEC has six teams, but the ACC has five, the Big Ten has four, the Big 12 has four, the Pac-12 has three, and then there's the American, who has number one team in the country. The Big East has one with DePaul, and the Atlantic 10 with Dayton has one. But all of those major conferences have at least three teams. So the talent is getting spread across the country, maybe not at the very top. Maybe it's still UConn, Notre Dame, now Dawn's in there. But it looks like we are getting talent spread out in these different places. And now, Cindy, I have a question for you. One thing mm-hmm. that I can never understand is the coaches and the writers basically put Cal and Stanford dead even. One pick Cal to be number one in the conference, one pick Stanford to be number one. And then the AP polls and the ESPN polls come out, and Stanford is well above Cal.
Well, that's just street cred and name recognition. I mean, for decades we have seen Stanford compete for national championships. Of course, they haven't won one since the early 90s, but been to several Final Fours. And then Cal bursting into the conversation a few years ago with Lindsey Gottlieb's first trip to the Final Four with that school. And her team is stacked. I mentioned Boyd. I mentioned Gray. She's got a kid with the last name of Range. Now, if this girl can step up and play to her name at 6'3", she can shoot from inside and drain the three. Courtney Range could be the difference maker for that team and just underline the word balance when you see that Cal team take the floor in inside-out game. I'm very curious to see how UCLA does. This recruiting class is no joke. I know Coach Corey Close is trying to keep it close to the vest and not shout out from the top of her lungs that, wow, my team is loaded. But from what I've heard about the closed-door scrimmage and what I saw in their game against Westmount, this team, it could be really special and really fast because she's putting it through the meat grinder right away, starting with the next couple of Sundays at number 13, North Carolina, followed by at number 9, Texas, on Sunday, November 23rd. We will know real quick how good this UCLA team can be. And I think a lot of its success might come from Kerry Korver. Korver is so special as a leader, not just a deadly shooter from three. I watched her in practice last year when she was rehabbing the right ACL, couldn't even run the floor, could only do shooting drills. This was in late January, early February, and was such a force from the bench, encouraging her beleaguered crew that was so injury-riddled, forcing and willing them to give an extra 15% that they probably didn't even think they could. I think she could be the catalyst to help Corey's message get through to these outstandingly talented freshmen, and this team could do some damage.
Now, the other freshman that I do want to mention out there, too, when we were talking about Cal, we did not mention Gabby Green, who when Coach Gottlieb was on our podcast a couple weeks ago, she was just raving about how green it's going to be and the type of player that she's going to be. There are a bunch of freshmen. There are a bunch of sophomores and, you know, that are also going to be making waves throughout the country. You know, you look at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame, of course, has one of the top freshmen in the country coming in there, and they have several other talented players. Breonna Turner is going to be an impact player in the ACC. LaChyna, one question that I asked Coach McGraw a couple weeks ago was if she had ever had a player with the athleticism and basketball skills combined of Jewel Lloyd. And she said she didn't think she had. She said she's had some good ones, but she didn't think she had. That's some pretty high praise, and I have to agree. I think that Jewel Lloyd is one of the really special players in the country.
Yeah, I think she is too, Dave. And, you know, I've often described some of the moves I've watched her make during a game as NBA-like. Again, just not even having a very good comparison for a lot of the things that we see her do on the floor. So you take Jewel Lloyd's athleticism and you add just pure skill. You know, I think she has a very good understanding of the game. Muffet McGraw has long said in the recruiting process that she asks players to draw up plays, to explain things to her. So even before arriving on that campus, she expects that you have a high basketball IQ. So you take two players like Tiffany Mitchell from South Carolina and Jewel Lloyd. The difference is, in my opinion, is Jewel Lloyd adds more skill. You know, I mean, we talk a lot about our game and where it is right now and how it's growing. And there's a ton of athleticism. It's picking up speed thanks to a lot of the rule changes and things that have been put in. But, again, going back to how we can grow players
skill and their basketball IQ. And there's been talk about the grassroots level and what we can do at AAU and things like that. But that's where Jewel Lloyd, I think, really excels, is that I see a player that understands the floor and what's going on at all times. And, you know, she kind of came in and she's fit in any role they've needed her to play. You know, I mean, they've had big stars, even McBride last year, but Jewel Lloyd found her time to shine. And I think back to a big Monday game last year they played at Maryland, and it was like she just took over. You know, she looks like this quiet kid, and when it's time to win, she's going to score. And there's nothing you can do to stop that. So I think she's one of those very fun to watch unstoppable forces on the offensive end in our game.
You know, one of the key players I mentioned, sophomores, and that's where I was going with this too, is in addition to Lloyd, Lindsay Allen is going to be huge for Notre Dame. She had one of the top assist-to-turnover ratios in the country as a freshman last year and is going to be counted on to add some scoring. But, LaChyna, you mentioned Maryland, and that was where I was actually going to go here because with your covering of the Big Ten, Lexi Brown is a very special sophomore. And she's not the only one in the Big Ten. There is some really good young talent in that conference.
Yeah, there is. And it's going to be exciting to see what happens in the Big Ten. You know, David, as you mentioned, I think there is more balance across the country in these various conferences, and that's because we're seeing the talent really spread out. But Maryland in particular has a great opportunity because of their identity to come into a league like the Big Ten, who's, I would say, has traditionally not been as physical as a Maryland team is going to play or even a Rutgers team is going to play. So right away, coaches will have to adjust. You know, I think we saw the first wave of change when Nebraska came in from the Big 12, and they kind of changed the way the league played, and everyone else has recruited differently because of the athletes and the way that they pressured, but they had to play that way in the Big 12. So Maryland has a very unique opportunity. And if you look at their run towards the end of last year, yeah, I mean, God, Lexi Brown was fantastic as a freshman. But then also you had Breonna Jones, and even though they had some more veteran post players as a freshman, she came in and was playing quality minutes for them towards the end of the season. So you don't have Alyssa Thomas, but you have a group of younger players who have been under the microscope and have made it all the way to a Final Four and understand what it takes. And you add to that, you know, players like Brene Mosley, I think, is going to be key for them. I think she'll be a big part of whatever they do. Lauren Mincy. So Brenda Freeze keeps the recruits coming in, but I think it's the fact that they're coming to a new league where coaches are going to have to adjust to the way they play that's going to give them an advantage this year in the Big Ten.
You know, the Big Ten is definitely a conference that I was joking with Kim Barnes-Arico about last year about, you know, congratulations, welcome to having C. Vivian Stringer back in your conference again after you thought you got out of there. Now you got to go face that defensive pressure again. Because I like Rutgers. I really do like Rutgers' team. I think that they have their own super sophomore in Tyler Shafe. That's a tremendous player. Kalia Cooper is a good player. And I think that people are sleeping on Rutgers in the Big Ten because everybody is, again, looking, you know, they all look at the Heartland. They look at Iowa, Samantha Logic, and Rachel Therio in Nebraska. And Michigan State, nobody ever knows anybody on their team, and they just win. So it always seems to be a fun conference. But, Doug, putting a little WNBA slant on this, looking at the Big Ten for a second, Rachel Banham has been called Lindsey Whalen Jr., Lindsey Whalen Light, of course, because she's in Minnesota, but that's really not fair to her. She is a very talented player in her own right.
Yes, she definitely is. I would say, without breaking any confidences, that Banner was very high up on the preseason AP All-America list. She wasn't one of the top five, but had we had a second team, she would have been one of the leaders of it, so to speak. She's very talented. I mean, Minnesota is basically goes as she goes, and I think she's going to have a super season for them. And you're right, the Big Ten is going to be interesting. It is strong across the board. Adding Maryland and Rutgers definitely helps them, gives them more depth and more talent. From a selfish standpoint, I'm glad that Rutgers is in the Big Ten because now more Big Ten teams come east to play Rutgers, which isn't that far from New York. So They get to see more of the talent out there from the Heartland, which is great. I really think that there really is a lot of good young talent in that conference. I think they are another one of these conferences that hasn't really had teams advance lately to the Final Four that far on the national stage. So they haven't gotten maybe the respect or attention that some people would expect. But now you had Maryland, who was in the Final Four last year, and Rutgers, who is a perennial power. And I think C. Vivian's really has a good young nucleus there and some talent that I think will do well in the Big Ten and do well nationally. I mean, they're playing Tennessee and Carolina, I think, in early December, both of them. So that will kind of go back to the old C. Vivian strainer scheduling where you have see how good your team is before they start playing conference play. And I think they're going to be pretty good. And Michigan State, as you said, is really strong. The one team I feel really bad for and the one coach I feel bad for in that conference is Kevin McGough, because I think they've already lost three players for the season at Ohio State. He was starting to build something there. He was really excited about this year's team and the youth on it, and he's already lost three players for the year with knee injuries and other injuries. So that's not the conference. I mean, not many conferences you want to lose three players to, but when you have that much depth in the conference and you lose three players who are going to be helping for you, that's not a good sign for now and definitely not for the rest of the season when you get to conference play.
No, I have one question that I want to ask each of you for your opinion based on what Doug just said. The amount of injuries has been unbelievable so far this year. Now, I have to wonder, do you think that the increase in injuries has anything to do with the increase in time that schools are allowed, that extra couple weeks at the start of the season? You know, it just seems like they constantly play this, you know, again, you know, it's all the same practice drills and, you know, it's different than games. You know, Cindy, do you think that having extra time at the start of the season might be causing some of these injuries, or do you think that it doesn't matter? I mean, in what you've seen in practices, you know, is it a different type of atmosphere or something when you have this type of time? It's just strange to me that it seems to be happening.
Well, I hope it's not because the teams are getting extra practice time, because I was at Arizona State's practice yesterday, and they need time to mesh. They've got some youth. They're trying to figure out who they want to be, and they need to drill. And I tell you what, there's another guard to watch out for, and that is Promise Arikamura. That kid is a blur. She is so phenomenally fast with and without the basketball. ASU was concentrating on defense yesterday primarily in its practice, and Promise would get beat, and she was so fast she could recover. I have not seen a player be able to do that with my own eyeballs. It was phenomenal. And I look at Washington State University that is trying to incorporate seven freshmen, all of whom almost have passports from Australia, from Estonia, from Greece. I mean, you're not only dealing with the basketball language, but the language barrier. So for June Doherty to not have extra time with those kind of players, I think would be detrimental to the sport. You know, I've heard a lot of different arguments. You know, some teams are actually going to low tops instead of high tops because they think the high top is too restrictive when a player plants, and that creates extra torque on the knee, particularly for the ACL. I noticed Candace Dupree has played primarily her entire WNBA career with low tops just for that reason. So, you know, and then I've had three ACL repairs on my left knee, and I've had an orthopedist tell me that it's just the fact that I'm a woman and the displacement of my hip. So, I mean, sometimes you just have a run of bad luck. Sometimes it's Mother Nature, and you just hope the injuries don't happen. And especially like the case that Doug was mentioning with Ohio State, it's just debilitating. I mean, that coach and that program was going in the right direction, and you just hate to see that happen to any program.
LaChyna, what do you think? I mean, do you have anything? Is it the equipment then that, you know, like Cindy was mentioning as a possibility, or is it just it happens?
You know, Dave, I wish I knew the answer, you know, and I think everything Cindy said could be exactly correct. It could be, I mean, a number of things. You just never know. Is the equipment, is the time they're practicing, is it something they're doing you know, I think strength and conditioning coaches always come up with new and different techniques, and you just don't know. But whatever it is, it's sad. It's just so sad. I mean, I really don't know what the answer is, and I hope that there's more research put into it. But, you know, I mean, you got to think young women are playing earlier in their lives now. They're playing at a higher level, more games in the summer as far as the AAU and things like that. So if anything, I would say we would need to take a look at the wear and tear over time. Again, if they're playing high school season and they're playing AAU, I mean, yeah, and I played AAU, and it was like, okay, you play three games in a day and go home. But again, with the talent level being higher and the game just changing and some of the physical play, which we don't love, is that too much? You know, what is that doing at that phase of their careers before they even enter college? During a time when your bodies are growing and your tendons and your muscles and all those things. So that could be it. I wish I had the answer.
Doug, you're a guy, so you don't know any of this stuff.
Well, that's true. I don't know anything about the ACL and the displacement of the hips, although I did coach girls high school basketball for 16 years, and fortunately in my 16 years I never had to deal with an ACL injury, which was a definite blow thing. But
you were the player.
Do the studies to figure out why women are more susceptible to it and such. I go back to the whole time and practicing, and I think it definitely helps teams having more time to practice, especially teams that are up and coming that have young players and such. Same way that going to Europe helps teams when they can go every couple of years to sort of mesh young talent with new talent and old talent. My one thing is the team that's won more national championships than anybody starts, I believe, October 15th, or around that same old starting date, because they plan to play until April every year. And if it works for them, you got to think it works for a lot of other teams. It should work for other teams that they don't start the 40 days before their first game, because they think that they want to have a long run and to keep a player's attention from, let's say, September through April. That's what, 7 months or so, 8 months? I mean, that's a long time to keep everybody's interest and on the same page and focused. So I understand why it helps some teams be able to start now earlier, late September, if they're fortunate enough to have it, their start date that early. I just think I'm a purist. I miss Midnight Madness, where everyone knew that the first start date was a certain day, or whatever, it was the second Friday in October, that everyone started that day. So you kind of had the excitement of it, as opposed to, oh, we're starting September 30th, we're starting October 3rd, we're starting October 7th, we're starting October 10th, where it's like there isn't that definitive start date for practice to start, where to me it loses something a little bit that's not the same as it was 5, 6, 7 years ago. And does that prevent injuries? I mean, there were injuries back in before they could start earlier, and there'll probably be injuries moving forward for the rest of the time we play basketball, because it's part of the game, part of every sport. It's unfortunate that teams lose players because of ACL injuries or other stuff of that nature, but unfortunately it's part of playing a sport. And it'd be great if we could figure a way to solve it out so that there are less injuries, less ACL tears, less concussions, wherever it may be. And I think, as LaChina said, that hopefully these new rules will sort of free things up a little bit and make less contact. But I think for the most part, a lot of these injuries that are season-ending, a la ACL or Achilles, whatever it may be, aren't related to contact. It's more just freak of nature, unfortunate bad luck.
All right, now let's get on back to happier stuff. Enough of the depressing stuff. Just real quick, I just wanted to mention, you know, we've sort of overlooked the Big 12 in a lot of the conversation we've had here, just because of it just has worked out that way. But Baylor is going to be tough again this year. Nina Davis is a stud, and of course Texas. I love what Coach Astor is doing there. And one of my sleeper players for the year is Nneka Enemkapali. I think is going to be a phenomenal player this year. From what I've heard, she's worked on a range, and things are going to go very well there. And I also want to say one that got away from Connecticut, West Virginia. Mike Carey is one of my favorite coaches because he can always get his teams to play hard and win. And Bria Holmes from Connecticut is preseason player of the year in the conference. So the Big 12 is loaded. But now that I threw out some names, let's change for the last part of this conversation to some individuals. We've been talking about the teams and the games, and you know, there's some wonderful, wonderful talent out there. we mentioned a whole bunch of names in this, but a couple of, let's touch base on a couple of sleepers, people that may be some upstarts that you guys think could have some breakout years that maybe aren't Breanna Stewart or aren't Kalyna Musketa-Lewis or, you know, any of the names that you're used to hearing, Jewel Lloyd and, of course, you know, Tiffany Mitchell. So, Cindy, talked about the Pac-12 here. You know, Kelsey Plum has gotten a lot of recognition in Washington lately. She is growing.
She should.
one of those sophomores that we talked about, and I just took her away from you, I'll bet you.
Yeah, she is outstanding. Oh, no, she is outstanding. Such an absolute delight and joy to watch. She scored 712 points last season. 712. That was a University of Washington single season record. She is just scratching the surface of how good she can be. And she's complimented in that backcourt with Jasmine Davis, who starts the season 274 points shy of the all-time scoring record that she's basically going to set and leave for Plum to break. That backcourt is sensational, and it's one of several in the Pac-12. You still have Leah Galdera and Thea Presley at Washington State University who can fill it up. Leah has really come into form. She has worked so hard in the off season, and her game is so smooth. It's and now complemented by some major bigs down low. The recruits from Australia, Lou Brown, Louise is her name, but they call her Lou, a rebounding machine. So she's going to get the basketball out to these people who can score at Wazoo. It's going to be an outstanding season. I'm also, I mentioned Kerry Korver. I love her game. I love her ability to shoot the three. And I'm very, she's a big, she's not small, but she's Jillian Aileen. What she can do to help lift that program up in light of the dismissal of Roe and help Kelly Graves fortify his position now as the seventh head coach in Ducks history. You know, he left Gonzaga, a very successful program that he built, that's made six straight trips to the NCAA tournament for this opportunity, and now it's at his feet. He's done some house cleaning. He's learned that he inherited a lot of people that don't know how to play defense. So it'll be interesting to see what Aileen can do as the nation's top rebounder going forward.
I think Aileen in particular is somebody that I'm interested in seeing because she did have such gaudy numbers last year that interested in with a real coach that plays both ways.
She's going to have to defend the basket.
But he didn't do two ways. So let's see what she does now.
Yeah. And I think it'll make her even more prepared for the next level at the W. And she's special. I've seen her in person several times, and she's got just a prototypical pro basketball body. And she's really smart, and she's embracing what Graves wants to do. So that's a really good thing. And she was one of the folks when the coaching change was rumored that brought everybody together and said, nobody transfer, let's stick together. So she's not only a leader on the floor, she's a leader off of it.
Now, I'm also the last person I'm going to mention out there is, so I'm just because I have to beat Doug to her again this year like I've done the last years, is I love watching Brittany Boyd. And
I got to
throw her name out because she's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Even when she beat the lights out of my Washington State University team and fed her teammate Gray for a career-high 43, that tandem is special. And Boyd, the light is just turning on. She's just realizing how good she can be. Her favorite player in the W is Kathy Pondexter. So she, you know, mirrors her game after her. And she's ready to get this team to Tampa. That's the goal. They have written it on the board. They don't want to surprise anybody. They just want to get the job done.
LaChyna, you have been checking out a whole bunch of places all over the country. As we talk about, you're always easy to find at different locations. You always say, oh, LaChyna's there. why don't you throw out a couple names for us for people that you think we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I've got a few that I think are really fun to watch. I'm going to start in the Big Ten with Northwestern. And if you haven't seen Mia Coffey, this is a team that I really think if their young talent can come together, they're going to be so special. Mia Coffey was a McDonald's All-American last year as a freshman, did well in the Big Ten, but I think she could really do something special this year. She's 6'1", and hasn't really learned how to rebound the ball like I think she will, but she's a fantastic scorer. And again, this roster, Ashley Barrier on the perimeter, Lauren Douglas, who's a junior this year, has outstanding shot blocking skills, is a very good rebounder. So look for Northwestern in general, but especially Mia Coffey. And Kristen Inman is also a player that's really, really fun to watch. So I wanted to give them a shout out. And then I am going to jump over to the Big East and a couple of players there that I've enjoyed watching. First of all, I think Seton Hall, and you know this, Dave, that Tony Vizzell is going to have, I think, a breakout season. I think people not only underestimated Seton Hall, but also with the additions of Daisha Simmons, and then they just got a transfer from West Virginia that's going to be eligible. This could be a dangerous team. Like, they've got very good players, Khadija Simmons, Tabitha Richardson-Smith. I mean, those are two names in particular that I think people should be on the lookout for. But I think Aaliyah Hanford is at St. John's, is another player in this league. Obviously, Marissa Janning is going to be is the preseason player of the year. And then for DePaul, I mean, from top to bottom, I think, you know, Doug Bruno's done a fantastic job of bringing talent in. But those are some names that you didn't necessarily see a lot in the preseason, but you should keep your eye on the talent in the Big East. I think there are going to be more teams in the tournament than were originally anticipated. And then I'll go with Wake Forest University with a player by the name of De'Erica Hamby. You know, I don't know how you lead the ACC in scoring and second in rebounding and you don't get a look for top 25 player. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Wake Forest alum, but this kid really has the potential to outplay Elizabeth Williams. You know, I think Elizabeth Williams got a lot of the preseason votes because we know what she's capable of. But De'Erica Hamby could be a top five draft pick. She could be a sleeper, and she could be the best post player in the ACC this year. So she is one that, not for selfish reasons, but I would also keep an eye on. Last but not least, and that's in the ACC. Last but not least, going to the American. Jose, I think, is also going to have a very good year down at USF. And the player that I would love for everyone to see is Courtney Williams. She has unbelievable jumping ability, a mid-range game, much like Tyler Scaife, who you mentioned from Rutgers, David, that we don't see enough in women's basketball. And I think Courtney and also, you know, her front court mate, Alicia Jenkins, who led the league in rebounding last year, also for USF, looks for this team to do special things. Now, they've got a tough schedule, you know, in terms of their preseason stuff. So we're going to find out early on what kind of contender they will be. But I really think that that is going to be an NCAA tournament team for Jose.
Love Courtney. Love Courtney's game. I think that that's a great choice. Doug, hit me with some people.
I'm not sure who's left. Cindy and Doug did a great job of yourself as well of naming a lot of the sleepers. Since you took Brittany Boyd, I'll take the other Brittany, Ranko for DePaul, who I think isn't really a sleeper per se, but really could be a catalyst to letting DePaul to a very special season. I think that they're picked to win the Big East, and I think they could have a really good year. They have enough really good non-conference games. They're playing Notre Dame and Connecticut and A&M, so that's three games right there where we'll see where DePaul is by the time they start playing conference games. I think a smaller mid-major team could make Graham Haynes happy. Iona's got a heck of a player in D'Amica Martinez who can flat-out score. They're playing Rutgers early on at home, so that could be an interesting game for them to sort of get them propelled onto the national stage. I love Courtney Williams, watching her play. Yes, Dave, I do love watching Brittany Boyd play as well. But I think you guys covered most of it. I mean, there's a lot of really good players out there, and the best part is, we'll see a lot more names that we haven't mentioned today over the next couple weeks and months who will show themselves as the next and upcoming talent in women's basketball.
You know, Graham, you mentioned Graham. Graham has a great piece on the top mid-major players on the ESPNW. And, you know, he's got two names in there that I just want to throw out. Crystal Bradford is a player that plays with so much intensity and plays so hard that if she stays healthy, she is going to have a big year and could propel herself right to one of the top WNBA draft spots, I think, out of Central Michigan. And the one that I got to mention that's one of my favorite players to watch, that I get such a kick out of is coming from West Point, Kelsey Minato is 5'8" and probably about 110 pounds soaking wet. And this girl can shoot the three, gets to the line. She had 200 foul shots last year. She's not afraid of contact. She's one of, you know, as Graham said in his piece, there was only four people that attempted as many foul shots as her. So this girl's going to score average over 20 points a game this year again for West Point. She's a junior this year. She is a West Coast player whose family is military, so she wanted to play for West Point. She could have gone to a lot of places, but she is a blast. She is the opposite type of small guard as Mariah Jefferson at UConn, who I will also throw out is going to have a huge year. Mariah is all quickness. Kelsey is all guile, but both of them are great. Guys, it's been a blast.
Doug, I wanted to mention one more, if I can. Can I mention one more player? Sorry, when you guys started talking about...
Only if it's not from Wake Forest.
Yes, it's not from Wake Forest. But as you guys started talking about mid-majors, Chastity Gooch, who is at Western Kentucky, I called the Sun Belt Conference Championship game last year, where Western Kentucky upset Arkansas State, and she was just fantastic. And I think Graham actually had them as his main photo on the site there. But she's about 6 foot tall, and you will underestimate her all day because she's not fast. She's not, you know, extra physical. She is precise. She is a player that executes. She takes her time. You can't speed her up. She's not rattled. I mean, this team, I believe, was down 12 points with just a few minutes to go left in this championship game for the Sun Belt crown, and kicked it into high gear, and I have so much respect for her as a player. You know, I'm not saying she's going to wow anyone, but when you look at her numbers at the end of the night, she's going to give you both defense and offense, and I would put her up against some of the best undersized posts in the country.
I am so excited for this season. I just got to give a shout-out to Oregon State and Mad Props for starting the season in the top 25 for the first time since the mid-90s when they ended the season in the top 25. Love what's going on with the Beavers. And listening to you guys talk about the other conferences that I don't get to see as much as I used to, I am beyond excited to be boarding a flight to Puerto Rico for the San Juan shootout right after Thanksgiving, because in addition to Washington State, I'll see teams like Maryland and Michigan. So thank you guys for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cindy, can you pack me in your bag? I want to go.
I'm not going to lie. I love that Washington State University schedules preseason tournaments in tropical places. Last year it was Hawaii. This year it's Puerto Rico.
Well, you know, when you get a good gig, you got to ride it. Cindy, go for it. Well, guys, you know, it's too early and there's too much real estate ahead of us to even bother discussing who's going to win a national championship or who's going to make a Final Four. So we're going to pass on that. Give, as we usually do, I'm going to give you one chance at the end to speak your mind, say whatever it is that you would like to wrap things up with and you'd like to leave our listeners thinking about. Cindy, why don't we start with you?
I will lay down the gauntlet. If the Pac-12 doesn't receive at least 8 NCAA tournament bids, something is wrong with the system. The conference from top to bottom will be a meat grinder during the regular season. We're going to find out very quickly in the next couple of weeks for sure, based on the strength of non-conference scheduling, just how good these teams are. And when we do, everybody better not sleep on the Pac-12.
LaChyna?
That's awesome. Dang. Let's see. Well, I know you were taking us off the hook, Dave, but it's hard for me not to believe that UConn is going to repeat. You know, I just think the player you mentioned a couple minutes ago, Mariah Jefferson, you know, to have a true point guard, you know, I know Bria Hartley had tried to squeeze into that position during some of her time there, but Mariah is really special. She's brought a different dimension to UConn basketball with her speed. She's confident, you know, and I think along with KML, and Brianna, and another player is Kia Stokes. You know, I mean, God, don't we just lick our chops watching her play? Like, looking at her body, she's got all the tools, and I heard she's shooting threes now and attempting outside shots. So if she brings offense, you know, yes, they will still need their depth to grow and their young players to contribute, and you're missing a lot. You know, what is their identity going to be without Stephanie Dolson? She has been their identity, not only on the court, but also off the court. So what is the identity? I think it's slow to come together at the beginning, but I'm going to call it UConn's going to win another one.
Doug?
Well, it's easy to go that way, and I would definitely not disagree with the China on that one. But my thought, honestly, is I'm excited basketball starting again. I mean, it starts Friday, and to me that's the best time of year, is the start of college basketball season. There's nothing like it. The passion these kids play with and play for, because it's not about the money for them, at least not yet. And I think it's exciting that we have a lot of teams we can talk about. And I'm actually excited. I think for the first time in a while that there are a lot of wide-open conferences. I mean, the Pac-12, it's not Stanford and everybody else. It's, as Cindy said, 8 teams could be in the NCAA tournament, and maybe 8 teams could win the Pac-12 this year. And ACC, yeah, Notre Dame ran through it last year undefeated, but Duke's pretty good. Carolina's got Sylvia Hatchell back. Louisville's in it now. I mean, they're pretty good. Big Ten, any of the 6 or 7 teams we mentioned could win it. The SEC is, sure, South Carolina's the favorite, but Tennessee, A&M, I have chances, Kentucky. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that could win that conference. So the fact that there are interesting races in most of the conferences right now, to me, it makes it exciting. And that's what anyone wants, a chance to win. And I think for the most part, going into the NCAA tournament, most teams have a chance to win their conference. And then we all kind of know what probably will happen, that there'll be a team from Connecticut with a good chance to win a third straight championship.
Thanks, Doug. Well, guys, it's been great. And, you know, it's one thing that we haven't mentioned that I'd like to say, you know, we didn't touch a lot on Duke and North Carolina and those other schools in the ACC, but I got to wonder what it's going to feel like when they have these first matchups and, you know, they're used to beating on each other. And then in comes Jeff Walls with the sleeves rolled up, berating the referees. I've always said the toughest job in women's basketball is a referee in a game that Jeff Walls is coaching. I really am interested in seeing how Louisville is going to crash the ACC party and see how that goes. It's going to be very interesting.
And that's where I would probably have to disagree with Cindy. I think the ACC is going to be the toughest league this year, you know, and you're right. I mean, Jeff Walls, you had Louisville, and just looking at what some of the ACC teams have done in recent years, yeah, you lose Maryland, and that's significant. But you got Jeff Walls, you've got Muffet McGraw. I think North Carolina is underestimated. Their freshman and sophomore class, Alicia Gray especially, is a very special player. I understand they lost Diamond to Shields, but that roster is not hurting for anything. And we'll see what becomes of Duke. It looks like they got a lot of respect in the preseason polls, and maybe because they are shorthanded in the backcourt, that means they'll work through Elizabeth Williams more, which I think is an advantage for them. But you look at the coaches in this league, and it's scary, you know, in terms of the success and the talent, and it's just going to be fun. You know, you add Louisville to all that, it's like, this could be interesting.
And yeah, let's add UConn to it too, please.
I don't know if I can make that happen.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that as much as I am looking forward to this season, I'm not overjoyed by a schedule of home games that I have that includes Tulsa and Houston and some of these other teams in the American Conference. So I hope that somehow UConn can get this worked out and end up in the Big Ten or the ACC or something. But, of course, I say that, make that plea every year, especially now that Louisville's gone. Guys, thanks again. I know we're going to find you. Doug, you know, you're all over the place. Just look for the AP stories. You'll find that. LaChina, do you have a schedule as to where most of your games are going to be this year?
Yeah, I have to say, actually, even though I was able to chime in on the Big Ten, it's because I had worked it in previous seasons, I'm not working Big Ten this year. I am actually primarily going to be Big East, ACC, and a little bit of SEC sprinkled in there. So I'm really excited about that. And Yeah, so that's where you'll see me primarily. But I'll be covering everything because I now have more homework this year as an AP voter. So I better sit on the phone, that I'll be everywhere.
Well, I like to hear that we
good
have
answer.
Knowledgeable AP voters coming on board.
Oh, I love it. I have the luxury of being tied to the West Coast, so lucky for the second season. I'll be working for the Pac-12 networks, and this year I've increased my role with them. I will be doing play-by-play in addition to analyst work, and I get behind the mic, starting January when regular conference play starts.
Awesome. We'll look forward to hearing those games, too. No DirecTV, though. Got to mention it. Pac-12 Network. Come on. Work out the deal.
Oh, we mentioned that to Commissioner Scott at Media Day.
Guys, thanks again for the time. Everybody enjoy the start of the season. And I'm really appreciative for all the time that you guys have given us today. Take care now.
Thanks, David.
See you guys.